Masechet Baba Masiah, Daf Peh Dalid, and today we continue some of the most unusual stories in all of the Talmud and all of Midrash. We were talking about these two sages, Rabbi Elazar, the son of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and Rabbi Ishmael, the son of Rabbi Yoseh. Both of them collaborated with the Roman government and were arresting Jewish criminals. So they somehow tried to figure out who were the robbers and who were the criminals and handed them over to the Romans, which was a very controversial and problematic thing to do. What they also had in common is that they were extremely obese. What do these two things have to do with each other is not very clear. Perhaps, as a suggestion, their obesity represents a extending of boundaries. While most of the rabbis said, we are bounded by the Jewish community, we take care of ourselves, the Roman Empire is out there, we have to deal with them, but there is a strict boundary between the rabbinic and Jewish community and the Roman Empire outside. And these two sages are extending the limits of that boundary by going outside and enlisting Roman help to come and weed out God's garden by handing over Jewish criminals to the Romans, and thereby making that barrier, that fence, permeable in a way that is problematic and in a way grotesque. So let's continue the story. Ki havu mekala'ei Rabbi Ishmael b'Rabbi Yosef b'Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon b'hadeh hadadeh hava ayil b'karta detore banayhu b'la hava naga'a behu. So when these two sages, Rabbi Ishmael and Rabbi Elazar, when they would get together and meet each other, if they stood next to each other belly to belly, they were so fat that a pair of oxen could walk right under them, right between them, without touching them. That's how fat they were. Amra lehu hahi matronita, benechem enam shelachem. And so a certain Roman woman, which is interesting because they're the ones that are, you know, having this collaboration with the Romans, and now they have this conversation with a Roman noble woman. And she said, your children cannot possibly be yours, meaning it's impossible that you can have intercourse with your wives because your bellies stick out so much. Amrula shelahen gadol mishelanu, and they said, theirs is bigger than ours. Kol sheken, and so the Roman woman says, all the more so. She thought that they were, that the rabbis were talking to their wives' bellies and saying, well, if you're so fat and your wives are so fat, then there's no way you can possibly have intimacy and come close to each other. So that makes it even worse. In fact, it could be that the rabbis were talking about their wives' sexual organs. Ki ika de amre hachi amrula, ki cha ish, ki ke ish geburato, ika de amre hachi amrula, ahaba docheket et habasar. And so two possible answers that the rabbis gave to this Roman woman. One is quoting Pasuk in Sefer Shoftim, according to the man is his strength, meaning that the bigger a person, the person's belly is, the bigger are his reproductive organs. And so that's how they can have relations and have children. Or the other answer is love compresses flesh. They love their wives so much that love conquers all. That's how they have a continuity. So this brings up another theme that we saw before and will continue about fertility and transmitting from father to son, from parents to children. We saw before that these rabbis are accused that they are vinegar, the son of wine. And so here is questioning and anxiety about the ability of rabbis to transfer their knowledge and their leadership to the next generation, to sons, to students. And so the Roman looking on at them is like, how can you have continuity, right? Considering how, in a way, great you are, in a way, a great person, it's hard for such a person to have continuity. There's a story about Einstein has had a son who was also a scientist, but obviously he could never be as great as his father. And so when he was asked about this, he says, look, my father is Einstein, right? He's so great that no one can ever expect me to fill his shoes. So there's not, the expectation is not even there, right? So I'm going to continue and just be a scientist, but right, I don't think of myself as even trying to fill the shoes of my father. So as a similar analogy, these sages whose obesity may just represent their larger than life quality and their growth in Torah. So then the question is, how can they transmit that to their children? And each generation is a bit different from the others, and these are doing things differently than their fathers. And although they are somewhat different, yet there is continuity here. So there's a lot of depth in these analogies, even though they do seem very strange. Now the question, why'd they even talk to her? Why'd they respond to her? After all, the pasuk says, do not answer a fool according to his folly. If someone asks you a dumb question, you don't answer them. You don't give them the credit and the honor of even responding to them. They should have just ignored this Roman woman. But they did, because they did not want there to be her to cast aspersions on the lineage of their children. She'll go around and say, see, their children are not really theirs, and cause problems. And so therefore, in order to protect the reputation of their children, so they did give her an answer. So again, here you see that kind of anxiety about fertility, and in a way, the great obesity is a sign of fertility, and a possibility of gaining many children, students, and so on. And that we see in the next a most unusual discussion. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ebred Rabbi Ishmael Rabbi Yosef Kehemet Ben Tesha Kabin. So Rabbi Yochanan reports that the reproductive organ of Rabbi Ishmael son Rabbi Yosef was the size of a jug that could hold 9 kav. Amara Papa, Ebred Rabbi Yochanan, Kechemet ben bat Hameshet Kabin, Vamri la bat Sheloshet Kabin, and Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Papa taught that the organ of Rabbi Yochanan was the one that reported previously about Rabbi Ishmael, and so now Rabbi Papa, a later sage, is reporting about Rabbi Yochanan that he was the size of either five kav jug, or some say no, only 3. That Rabbi Papa, now Rabbi Papa himself, who just said that his own organ, Gufe ki dikure de harpenai, was like baskets made in harpenai. So here also, it would be strange to take this literally. What does this mean? Why are they comparing their sizes? How do the later rabbis even know this? So this could be, again, a symbol of their productivity, fertility, the greatness of their Torah, that they taught so much, how much they have to give, and so on. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ana ishtayeri mishapirei Yerushalayim, Hayman deba'e mechaze shufre de Rabbi Yochanan, naite kasad chaspa mibe silke, un miliyeh par si daya derumana sumaka, nedar le kelila da devarda sumaka lefume venotbe ben shimsha letula, huzahore me'en shufre de Rabbi Yochanan. Or we mentioned Rabbi Yochanan here in this section. And now we continue. Rabbi Yochanan says about himself, I am from the beautiful people of Yerushalayim. I am one of the remnant of these very handsome, beautiful people. And if you want to see something, the Gemara now says, Rabbi Yochanan just said that. Now the Gemara says, if you want to see something that is similar to the beauty of Rabbi Yochanan, here's what you should do. You bring a new shiny silver goblet, a new one that was just made from the smith, fill it with red pomegranate seeds, and put a diadem of red roses on the lip of the goblet, and put it between the sunlight and the shade, this beautiful, like, still life picture, and you think of the colors and the shine. That luster, that shine, is just a semblance of Rabbi Yochanan's beauty. That's how beautiful he was. Again, physical beauty, a spiritual Torah beauty. All these themes are mixed in one here. Ini, hold on, we have a challenge. Va'amar mor shufred Rav Kahana, ma'ayin shufred Rabbi Abhu, shufred Rabbi Abhu, ma'ayin shufred Yaakov Abinu, shufred Yaakov Abinu, ma'ayin shufred Adam Harishon, ve'ilu Rabbi Yochanan la kahashib le. We have a challenge. You said Rabbi Yochanan is the most beautiful person around from the remnant of Yerushalayim, but we have another statement that says Rav Kahana was a semblance of the beauty of Rabbi Abhu. And he was a semblance of the beauty of Yaakov Avinu, who, and Yaakov Avinu was, had a semblance of beauty of Adam HaRishon, who was an image of God, so he was the most beautiful. So you see from here that's comparing to Adam HaRishon, who was image of God, that we're not just talking about physical beauty, but that physical beauty that represents some kind of a spiritual height. But in any case, the point is that Rabbi Yochanan is not listed in this great lineage of beauty. So how could you say so beautiful? Why isn't he in this lineage? Shan Rabbi Yochanan dehadrat panim lahav yaleh. So he wasn't counted here because he did not have a countenance of face, meaning he did not have a beard. And these others all had beards. Rabbi Yochanan hava azil ve'yatib ashaare tibila. Rabbi Yochanan, because he was so beautiful, he would go and sit at the entrance of the mikveh. Amar ki salkan benot Yisrael metibilat mitzvah lifki ubi ki hechi de levelehu b'nei shapire kevati gemiri oraita kevati. So why did he sit at the entrance? So that the, when the Jewish woman left after they did tevilah, the idea is that the first person they encounter, their children will look like them. They'll the woman will think about that person that night. And then their children will look the same. So Rabbi Yochanan says, I want them to see me first, so that they will have beautiful children like me and sons learned in Torah like me. You see here, this is a good proof that the physical beauty is a representation of the spiritual beauty and Torah knowledge. And so they will aspire to be as great in Torah also as Rabbi Yochanan. Amru le Rabbanan, la mistefe mor me'ane bisha. So the rabbi said to Rabbi Yochanan, you're doing this. Aren't you afraid of the evil eye? Meaning that you don't show off and cause other people to be jealous. So you shouldn't do that. And by sitting there, you're saying, oh, look how beautiful I am. And this could cause people to be jealous and cause you harm. Amar lehu ana mizara de Yosef ka'atina de la shata be'ayna bishadichti ben porat Yosef ben porat ale ayin v'amar biabu atikre ale ayin ela ole ayin. Men Rabbi Yochanan says, don't worry about it. I am from the offspring of Yosef, Sadiq, and Yosef, he's protected from ayin hara, as the pasuk says in the blessing to Yosef. He's a fruitful vine, a fruitful vine, ale ayin, next to a fountain. But Rabbi Abhu says, don't read it next to a fountain, but rather not ale, but ole, that can rise over ayin. Also has a meaning of eye, meaning that they are above the evil eye, and they don't have to worry about that. Rabbi Yosef bar Chanina amar mehacha v'idgu laro bekerb haris madagim shabayam mayim mechasim otam ven ayim sholetet bahem af zaro shel Yosef en ha'ayin sholetet bahem. Or another proof that Yosef is above the evil eye, the blessing to them, to Yosef, is to his, Yosef's children, is that they will grow like fish in the midst of the land. And so why are they compared like fish? The simple reading is that fish multiply a lot. Again, here the theme of fertility and multiplicity. So just like fish, water covers over them, and therefore an eye cannot see them. So blessing is found when things are hidden, and you don't, and people don't show off. So too, the offspring of Yosef, the evil eye, will not have any dominion over them. Okay, so that was one story about Rabbi Yochanan and an example of his beauty, and now another famous one. Yomahad havaka sacher Rabbi Yochanan biyardena. One day Rabbi Yochanan was bathing in the Jordan River. Chazir Resh Lakish ushvad liyadena abatre. Resh Lakish, who at that time was not the great Amora, he was a bandit, a thief. And he saw Rabbi Yochanan, thinking that Rabbi Yochanan, his great beauty, he thought, Rabbi Yochanan thought that Rabbi Yochanan was a woman. and he jumped into the Jordan to go after him, thinking it was her. Amar le chelach leoraita, Rabbi Yochanan sees Esh Lakish make this huge leap and sees how strong he is and says, your strength should be devoted to Torah, right? In other words, stop, you know, why using your strength for banditry? Come apply your great talent and strength to Torah. Amar le shufrach lenasheh. Resh Lakish said, your beauty is fit for a woman. I thought it would, now he finds out it was a man. He said, yo, you're so beautiful, it would be more fitting for your beauty to be that of a woman. Amar le I hadrat bach yahibna lach achoti teshapira minai. So Rabbi Yochanan says, I'll make you a deal. If you make teshubah and go learn Torah, I will let you marry my sister, who is even more beautiful than me. Kabila le, Resh Lakish says, it's a deal. Ba'el mehedad la tuye mane vela maseh hadad. And then Resh Lakish wanted to jump back out of the river to get his clothes, but he was unable to. The point being that as soon as he committed himself to Torah learning, which takes a great spiritual strength, but there's a conservation of strength, and that great increase in spiritual strength then caused a decrease in his physical strength, and therefore thereby he was no longer able to jump out of the river. So we see here this kind of correlation between Torah strength and physical strength, and maybe the obesity is playing into that from before. Okay, akriyeh ve'atniyeh ve'shavyeh gabra rabba. So Rabbi Yochanan taught Resh Lakish, he taught him Mikra, Tanakh, he taught him Mishnah, and he made Resh Lakish into a great sage. Yomachad havu mepalgeh be'midrasha, hasayif ha'sakin v'hapigyon v'haromach magal yad magal kasir, mehem atem mekabelin tum'ah, mishad gemar melachtan. And so Rabbi Yochanan and Resh Lakish were study partners, chevrutot, and one day it was a machloket, a discussion in the Bet HaMidrash regarding a sword, a knife, a dagger, a spear, a hand sickle, and a harvest sickle. From when are they susceptible to receiving ritual impurity? The law is that if you have just raw materials that are not a vessel, even if a dead mouse touches them, they don't become tameh. It's just a piece of wood or rock or a hunk of metal, but does not become tameh. Only once they are made into a vessel and completed, right, at the point of completion, okay, now this is called a sickle, so then it's susceptible to becoming tum'ah. So they were arguing about what is the last step in the manufacturing of these various weapons or tools, and the answer was from the time that you complete the manufacture when the vessel is done. Now, when is that? When exactly? What's the last thing that you do? Rabbi Yochanan omer mishi yisarefem bakibshan. Rabbi Yochanan says, when you fire them in the furnace, you fire it up, right? And now it's nice and complete. Resh Lakish amar mishi yisach sechen b'mayim. Resh Lakish says, no, there's one more step. After you heat it up in the fire, to make it really strong, you have to dip it into water, into cold water, and that solidifies it and makes it very strong. Amar le lista'a belistayute yada. Rabbi Yochanan said, a bandit knows his banditry. Resh Lakish, right? You remembered your old profession, and you know your knives because you used to be a bandit. Now, it's not clear what Rabbi Yochanan meant by this. Maybe he was saying it in a joking way or in a positive way, like, your banditry from the past turned out to be useful for a Torah study. A good point you make that you make. Kind of a chazak baruch. However, we saw before that onat devarim is you don't never tell a baal teshuvah. Remember those terrible things that you used to do, and just bringing that up. Remember how you used to be a bandit. So Resh Lakish was offended. Amar le umaya hant li hatam rabbi karuli hacha rabbi karuli. Resh Lakish says, what have you ever done for me? When I was at the bandits, they called me the leader, rabbi rav. Just means a master. You're the master. Everybody called me the master of the bandits, and here I'm still called a master. So I didn't get any promotion from you, Rabbi Yochanan. What do I need you for? You never helped me. You never gave me anything, and now you're reminding me of my past and making fun of me. And so he says, really rejecting all this mentorship that Rabbi Yochanan had given him. Amar le ahanai lach de akribinach tachat kanfei shechinah. And Rabbi Yochanan says, oh, are you serious? I never helped you at all. All you want is to be called master by someone? Look what I did for you. I brought you close to be under the wings of the divine presence. You were a bandit, and now you're one of the most important sages in all of the Jewish people. That's nothing to you? And so this exchange of words, that's it, caused tension and kept them apart. Halash da'ated Rabbi Yochanan, halash resh lakish. So Rabbi Yochanan, he became depressed, he became upset, and because he became upset, Rabbi Yochanan was offended, became upset, Resh Lakish became physically ill. Rabbi Yochanan is the mentor after all, and even though Rabbi Yochanan did say something offensive first, whether he meant it or not, Resh Lakish saying this even more offensive thing back, causing Rabbi Yochanan to be upset and depressed. So Resh Lakish is going to get the physical effect of that. Atai achted kabachya amra le ase bishvil banai amar le azba yotomech yotomecha ani echye ase bishvil almanuti amar la vamanutecha alai tiptachu. So Rabbi Yochanan's sister, who was married to Resh Lakish, remember they went through with that deal. So she was afraid that Resh Lakish was going to die because of Rabbi Yochanan's offense. And so she begs her brother, right, to forgive him and pray for him to get better. And she says, you know, please do it for my children, that my children with Resh Lakish, that they should have no father. And Rabbi Yochanan says, no, I won't do it for that reason. After all, look at the pasuk in Yirmiyah. Hashem says, leave your fatherless children, I will rear them. Hashem will be the champion of orphans. So don't worry if they don't have a father, your kids will be okay. And so then she says, do it because of my widowhood. I'll be a widow if you let Resh Lakish die. And Rabbi Yochanan is not moved. He quotes the rest of the pasuk and says, let your widows trust in me. Hashem will take care of you. And no, I am too offended. I am not going to forgive or pray for the welfare of Resh Lakish. And sure enough, Nach Nafshe de Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Bava kam yistayir Rabbi Yochanan batre tuba. Resh Lakish died. Even though he died because of Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan was very upset, very pained. This reminds us of the theme from yesterday, of the laundryman who says an offensive thing to Rabbi Elazar, and Rabbi Elazar has him arrested, but then and killed, but then feels bad afterwards. So to hear, so the rabbi said, who can we send to comfort Rabbi Yochanan to be his chevruta, because now he's all alone. Talmud says elsewhere, o chevruta o mituta, well, either a good study partner or death. And so now he's all depressed. What can we do to help Rabbi Yochanan? Nezer Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat mechadedin shematete. So let's send Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat. He is very sharp, and maybe he could be a replacement study partner. Azal yateb kameh. So they did. Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat was sitting before Rabbi Yochanan. To sit before is, in a way, to, you know, at a lower level. Kol milta dahava amar Rabbi Yochanan amar le tanya de mesayya lach. And so everything that Rabbi Yochanan said, Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat says, oh, I know a braita that supports your opinion. So isn't this a good chevruta, right? You say something and the other one says, I have support, I have a proof for you. Amar at kebar lakisha bar lakisha ki hava amina milta hava maksheli asrin ve'arba kushiyat koshiyata umefarkina le asin ve'arba peruke umimela of Hashemata. Vat Amartanya de Messiah Lach, Atula Adana de Shapir, Kaamina. And so Rabbi Yochanan said, are you like about the son of Lakish, like Resh Lakish? Right? What would Resh Lakish do? Whenever I would say something, he would challenge me with 24 questions. And then that prompted me to have to think of 24 answers. And because of his challenges, that rose, was like two knives that sharpen each other. And his challenges forced me to find new answers. And through that, the halakha would be broadened, would be clarified, would be extended. You get the sense of the growth of Torah that may be again, symbolic of what we talked about last time, of these obese rabbis, that physical growth and the spiritual growth of Torah itself, that in every generation they're quoting the previous but challenging, and through challenging, actually, then there's gaps, then they have to force to provide answers, and through that Yagdil Torah V'Yadira, Torah grows and is glorified. So that's what I wanted in a Chevrutah, someone who will challenge me. You don't do that at all. Every time I say something, you bring a braita that supports me. Don't I know that what I say is already beautiful? Right, Shapir, again, this word, beautiful, being applied to Torah, not just to Rabbi Yochanan himself, right? I already know that I am saying good things. I don't need you to tell me to be a yes man. I need a chevruta who will challenge me, and there's no one that can do that anymore. Hava ka'azil v'kara mane v'kabache v'amar hecha at bar lakisha, hecha at bar lakisha, v'ava ka'savach ad deshafta atemine, ube'u rabbanan rachame'ale v'nach nafsheh. And so he was walking around, and he would tear his clothes and cry out and say, where are you, the son of Lakish? Where are you, the son of Lakish? And he screamed until his mind was taken from him, meaning he went insane. He couldn't function anymore. And the rabbis prayed to Hashem to have mercy on him and take his soul. We learn from here, by the way, a different thing, that of course we always pray for a person to get better, but there are some points at which there's no hope. And then you can pray, Hashem have mercy, whatever Hashem's will is. And that's what the rabbis do here. And Rabbi Yochanan died. Afilu hachi lo samach Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon adate. Now that's the end of that story, and now that was like a long tangent about the beauty of Rabbi Yochanan, and now we're going back to Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon. Remember how he would catch thieves by interviewing them in the tavern in the morning. And one time he arrested a laundryman, and he thought it was a mistake. It turns out he was a real lowlife, and he did this test of the of taking out his insides, and there also that test of we want to make sure he has integrity, that he's, everything he's doing is right. He patted his stomach to say, I trust my gut feeling, but paradoxically the test of that was to cut open his stomach and take everything out, and that really breaks the boundaries between what's inside and outside, Jewish and Roman, right and wrong, a person's external, what they seem to be like and who they really are, and so on. Okay, after he did all that, even though his flesh that he took out was in the sun and didn't decay, still he was not totally satisfied, and he had anxiety about, is he doing the right thing? Kabil ale isure, and so he accepted upon himself afflictions. He would pray for and bring upon himself physical bodily afflictions in order to atone for any possible mistakes that he made. Beurta havu maichila shitin namte lesafra negde metute shitin mashichle dama vechiba. And so he would at night, he would spread out 60 felt bed coverings for him, and in the morning, even though he had all these felt coverings and mattresses, he was bleeding all night. He had maybe sores and boils all over his skin, and his body was exuding all this stuff, and they would remove 60 basins of blood and pus from underneath him. So really a grotesque scene here. But showing how much he was pained, and he wanted to have this pain to atone for the possibility that maybe he caused some innocent and righteous people to be arrested and punished. Lemachar abada le debitu shitin mine lifda v'achi lehu ubare. But in the morning, every morning, his wife would prepare for him 60 types of dishes made from figs that he would eat them, and he would become healthy again. again. Vela hava shabka le debitu lemecha lemipak lebemidreshakihechi de la lid hakuhu rabanan. And even though now he was healthy in the morning and he was able to study Torah, his wife would not allow him to go to the study hall, so the rabbis wouldn't push him too much. And he goes, he was not so healthy, and so she didn't want him to overextend himself, and so he remained in isolation, and would then study by himself during the day, and at night he would be in pain. And this was his plan schedule. In the evening, he would pray and say, "My brothers, my friends, come," referring to his pain. He was happy to get this pain so that it could atone for his possible sins. In the morning, he would pray and say, "Pains, suffering, go away, because otherwise I can't learn Torah." So that way he was had a pain Torah balance. So one day his wife overheard him making these prayers. She thought that these are, well, you know, too bad. He's getting these diseases. What can we do? And so she would do everything to help him out. And now she said, "Oh, you're praying for these, bringing upon them upon yourself. You know how much money I have to spend on your medical care, on these mattresses and all the food that I have to give you in the morning and the medications and all that. Where is it coming from?" She had money that she brought into the family from her father's home, and she's spending all that money. She was happy to do so beforehand when she was taking care of her husband who has this disease. But now she says, "You are purposely praying that you should get these diseases and causing all this trouble, and my family has to pay for it." So she rebelled and says, "I'm out of here." And they separated. She went back to her father's home, and now he had nobody to take care of him. Siliko veatu hanach shitin sifona e. Ailule shitin abde, ki nekite shitin arneke, veaba abdule shitin mine lifda, veachilehu. But no worries. Happened to be just the next day, the 60 sailors came, and they came to visit Rabbi Elazar, and they brought him 60 servants, and each one had 60 purses, and they had 60 types of relish, and he ate them. And so now he had these sailors to thank, and they took care of him, and they had plenty of money and food, and they were able to take care of his medical needs and food expenses. It seems that these sailors had some trouble out at the sea, and they were saved in the merit of Rabbi Elazar. So when they got to dry land, they came and they gave him all these gifts. And so now he was well taken care of. Yomahad amra la librata. Zili baki ba'avuch ma'ika avida idana. Oh, one day, Rabbi Elazar's wife told their daughter, "Go and check on your father to see what he's doing." And even though she left, she still cared about him, and she couldn't stand what he was doing, and she protested and walked out. We understand why she did that, but she still wanted to check on him, so she sent her daughter. Atya amarla zili amri le'imech shelanu gadol mishelahem. So she comes and says, "Dad, my mom's asking about you. What should I tell her?" And he said, "Go tell your mother that ours is greater than hers," meaning I am now richer than she and her family is. I'm taking care of myself from the benefit of these sailors. Kariya nafshe haytake onuyot socher memerchak tabi lachma achav shate ubare nefak lebe midrasha. He applied to himself the pasuk from the paragraph of Eshet Chayil, that she is like a merchant ship, she brings food from afar. This is ironic, because usually we say Eshet Chayil is referring to a person's wife, and his wife was taking care of him, right, personally, financially, medically, and everything. But then she left, so now instead it's applied as to the Torah. The Torah is like a merchant ship that brings food from afar, and this literally was true. The merchant ship came and brought to Rabbi Elazar everything that he needed. So he ate and drank and became healthy again. And now he went to the Bet Midrash. Beforehand, his wife was preventing him to go to Bet Midrash. But now, with the wife out of the house, he comes to study. So one of the things they're discussing is Tuma and Tahara regarding blood stains from women who are Nida, that the rabbis have to come and check to see, is it blood? If it is blood, uterine blood, then she's Tameh, she's Nida. But maybe it's a stain from that's not blood, and therefore she would be tahor and she can be with her husband. So they brought 60. 60, you see, is a key number throughout. 60 is a way of saying a lot. Is there in Bavel? The story is told in Bavel, even though it's about rabbis, Tanaim from Eretz Yisrael. But it's told in Bavel where they counted in base 60. We still have a remnant of that today with 60 seconds and 60 minutes. So 60 is just saying a lot. It would be like today saying, 100 or a million, a round number that is, the maximum within that column. Okay, so they brought him 60 different cloths to inspect. Oh, he said that they're all tahor, all 60 of them. So the rabbis then were making fun of him. He doesn't have not even one doubt. So you see, same problem from before, that sometimes Rabbi Elazar was relying on his gut feeling to know whether this person is a robber or not. And so to here, he says, he goes through all of them, and they're all tahor. The rabbi's like, really? All 60? You don't have not even one doubt? Rabbi Elazar says, I'll do a test. This one is not as invasive as the one before. And he says, if I'm right, all these women will be with their husbands because they're tahor, and they will get pregnant and they will all have masculine children. And if not, if there even one girl is born, then I'll admit that I'm wrong. And sure enough, all of them were boys, and they named these kids after Rabbi Elazar, after his name. They were all called Elazar. Tanya, Amar Rabbi, Kama Pirya v'Ribya Bitela Resha'a Zo Meyisrael. And so Baraita says that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi said, how much procreation, fertility, did this evil woman prevent in Israel? Meaning the wife of Rabbi Elazar, because she prevented Rabbi Elazar, the son of Rabbi Shimon, from coming to the Beit HaMidrash, and he was not there to rule on the other cloth stains that came on other days, and the other rabbis were not as proficient to be able to, it's easy to say it's tameh, it's blood, it's no good, it takes a lot more greatness and knowledge and insight to understand how it could be tahor. And because he didn't come to the Bet Midrash, so all those women were prohibited to their husbands and didn't have children. And so now, see, he comes to the Bet Midrash. So why didn't he come? Because she was protecting her husband, or she was embarrassed from her husband going and being seen in public, whatever the reason is, that caused a lack of pidur vu. We see here again this theme of fertility, of procreation, of passing on to the next generation, right? Vinegar of son of wine, are you worthy to be your father's son? Will you be able to pass it on to the next generation, and so on? Ki hava kanicha nafshe, amar la debitu, yadan ebed rabbanan deretichi alai, vela mi asiki bi shapir. So when Rabbi Elazar, son of Bishman, was dying, he said to his wife, I guess they got back together, I know the rabbis are angry at me. Remember, the whole thing with arresting the thieves, and they're not so happy with me. And therefore, they are not going to properly bury me. I know this. Oganin be'elitai ve'la tidhalin minai. Therefore, here's my last request, my wife. I want you to lay me down up in the attic, and don't be afraid of anything. Don't be afraid that anything will happen to my corpse. Don't bury me. Just leave me in the attic. Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, Ishtaya'a li imeh derbi Yonatan, v'de ishtaya'a la debitu derbi Elazar v'derbi Shimon, la pachut mitemanesere v'la tefe me'asin utren shenin ognite be'alita. And we have a tradition of Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, who said that Rabbi Yonatan's mother told me that the wife of Rabbi Elazar, the son of Bishimon, told her that this wife, we just called her Rasha, but now she seems to be very very good and very important, that she laid her husband up in the attic for not less than 18 and not more than 22 years, somewhere between that. We don't know exactly, but he was up there for a long time. Ki hava salikna me'ayana le bemazyeh. So the wife also said, I would go up to the attic and I would check his hair, and any time a hair fell out, ki hava mishtameta binita mine hava te dema, I saw that blood would appear. In other words, that even though he was dead, the corpse was still vibrant. It did not rot to the extent that the blood was still circulating. If a hair fell out, then there would be blood there. Yomahad hazai rihasha deka nafik meune halashtatai. And the wife is continuing to report, one day I saw a worm coming out of his ear, and I became very depressed because I see now the body is going to decompose. Beforehand, it was all full of blood, and the organs and the flesh was not decomposing. Now, if a worm is coming out of the ear, it's not a good sign. Maybe it's all full of worms inside. In the olden days, they thought that worms spontaneously are generated from inside of a rotting thing. But then she continues to report, my husband appeared to me in a dream and said, don't worry about it. Don't worry about that worm out of the ear. It's not a sign of that I'm decomposing. Rather, this is a punishment, because one day I heard Tamid Chacham, he was being insulted, and I didn't protest and said, hey, don't say that, and I should have. So because I heard this Lashon Hara and I didn't say anything about it, this is a punishment for that. But so, yes, I deserve that, but don't worry, the body is not decomposing. Kavu atu betere ledina havu kaime ababa amar mor milete umor milete nafe kala meilite v'amar ish peloni ata chayav ish peloni ata zakai. While Rabbi Elazar was up in the attic, if two people had a dispute, they would come and stand in the doorway of their home, and one would give his side, the other would give his side, and a voice would come from the attic and say, you are guilty and you are innocent. So Rabbi Elazar, he was able to have influence and continue to teach and judge even after his death. Yomahad havaka misneya minseya debitu behade shebabeta amara la tehe kebaala sheloni tan likbura amri rabanan kulahai vadai lav orach ara. And then one day the wife of Rabbi Elazar had a quarrel with a neighbor, and the neighbor said as a curse, you should be like your husband who was never buried. You also should not be buried, but not in a good way. This is not be buried and never decompose, but you should never get the honor of a proper burial. You should be, thrown on the ground by an enemy or something. And so this is a terrible curse. And so now people are speaking badly about this. And so now the rabbis who before, were upset and weren't going to give him a proper burial, but now this 20 years later, they're like, okay, then you know what? This is not proper conduct. And, we can't allow this to continue any longer. Even though he's not decomposing, and this is a great miracle, shows his greatness, and is a reflection of the surgery test that he did earlier. Nevertheless, at this point, it's too much, and we have to give him a proper burial. Ikad amr Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai itchazai lehu bechelma amar lehu pirida achat yesh li benechem v'atem rosim lehabia etzli azur banan leisuke be. There's another version of why the rabbis changed their mind. It's not because of that neighbor who said a curse, but rather because Rabbi Elazar's father, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, appeared to the other sages in a dream and said, I have one little fledgling among you, have my son, and you don't wish to bring it to me by burying him next to me, right? Enough, guys. Come and let him come and be buried properly in the family cemetery near me. And so at that point, the rabbis decided that they're going to bury him. La shebaku b'nei Achbariya. Now, their house was in this town called Achbariya, and the residents would not let the rabbis take the body out. D'chol shenei davar na'im, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon Be'elite, La Selik Haya Ra'a Lematayhu. Because all those 20 or so years that he was resting up there in the attic, a wild animal never came to their town to bother anybody. So they felt that his body was protecting them, and so did not want them want him to be taken away. Yomachad Ma'ale Yomadi Chipura Hava Havu Teride Shedaru Larbanan Lebene Biri Vasekuhu Learse. To you, Lemearta De Abu. So they decided. They waited till Erev Yom Kippur. Everybody's busy with making a meal and preparing for Yom Kippur, and then they sent the people from Biri, a nearby town. Here's Achbaria. So they went to the people of Biri and said, come give us a hand. He was very heavy. And so they took his bier and brought it to their father's burial cave. Ashkahu l'achna dehadra la l'ma'arta. Amru la, achna, achna, pitri pich ve'ikanes ben esel abiv patach lehu. So they brought it to their family cave, and they found that there was a snake encircling it with its tail and its mouth as a lock, and wouldn't let them in. And so they said, snake, oh snake, open your mouth so a son can come and join his father. And sure enough, it opened up. This scene brings the story full circle, you might say, in that before he was accused of being a vinegar, the son of wine, Rabbi Elazar, compared to his great father, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. But now they come, and the rabbis themselves, who originally didn't want to bury him, now they say, let the son come and be buried with his father. So they're recognizing that Rabbi Elazar is in fact worthy of the stature of being the son of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Shalach Rabbi ledaber beishto shadchale keli shishtamesh bo kodesh shishtamesh bo chol. Now after Rabbi Elazar died, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi went and sent a message to the wife of Rabbi Elazar. She's a widow now, so Rabbi wants to marry her. And this is interesting because Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi is the one that called her a resha'ah earlier. Okay, maybe he called her a resha'ah at the end of this story. Okay, so now Rabbi wants to take her out on a date, and she says, absolutely not. A vessel that was used for holiness, can it be used for something not sacred? Meaning herself. She was a vessel used by the great Rabbi Elazar, married to him, and this would be a terrible downgrade compared to Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi would be profane, using something for hol. Taman amrin bata de mare beta telad zayne kulba ra'aya kute tela. In the Eretz Yisrael version of the story, they quote a folk saying that says, in a place where the master of the house hangs his sword, should the contemptible shepherd hang his basket? Right, you have the master of the house has a special hook, special place where he puts his thing. Can the lowly shepherd then use that same hook for his little basket? And the same idea, that the master of the house, that's to be Elazar, and he was married too. He made use of married to be Elazar. That was great. Is it worthy that now, instead of the master of the house, a lowly, contemptible shepherd, meaning you, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, should now use that same hook? Shelach la nehid betorah gadol mimeni. Al ma'asim tovim mi gadol mimeni. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi wants to defend his honor and says, no, I am worthy. It's true, I admit that in Torah your late husband was greater than me, but in good deeds was he greater than me? So I'm still better in a different way. So come on, go out with me. Shalcha le batorah mi hagadol mimecha la yadana b'masim yadana deha kabil ale yisureh. She says, listen, I don't know how to compare the Torah. If he was greater than you, maybe not. But I do know that regarding good deeds, deeds in general, I know that he was greater because he accepted upon himself afflictions. For what? Afflictions for perhaps arresting the wrong person when he was, after all, just trying to clean up the criminals from within God's garden. But Torah maihi. So now we ask ourselves, in what way do we know that Rabbi Elazar was greater than Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi in Torah? They were contemporaries, and as we're going to see, they were both students together in the yeshiva. דחי אבו יתבה רבנן רבן שמעון בן גמליאל ורבי יהושע בן קורחה אסף סלה. יתבה קמאי הוא רבי אלעזר ורבי שמעון ורבי ארעה. When רבן שמעון בן גמליאל, he was the nasi, the father of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, and Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha, they were sitting on benches when they were teaching and studying Torah. And at that same time, these younger people, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, so Rabbi Elazar, that's what we're talking about, they were sitting on the floor because they were younger and less advanced students. Makshu mefarku. Nevertheless, these two young students sitting on the floor, they would ask questions and they would answer them, showing how brilliant they were. Amri memehen anu shotin dehem yoshpin al gabe karka. So the rabbi said, we are drinking from their words, we're learning from them, and they're sitting on the floor and we're sitting on benches. It's not right. Abdu lehu safsale asikinhu. So they promoted them and they made benches, and now Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi were sitting on the benches. Amar lehen Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, pirida achat yesh li benechem, v'atem bakshim la'abeda hemeni. And then Rashbag, who was the nasi, didn't like this promotion. He says, I have one little fledgling among you, and you're going to destroy it. We had the same phrase before with about Rabbi Elazar. His father, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, said, bring him, let him be buried. But here it's Rashbag saying it about Rabbi, and he's worried. If you're going to promote him at such a young age, then he is not going to try hard. He's going to go to his head, and he's going to think that he knows everything. Right? Better to leave him down, leave him humble on the floor, so that he's not ready to be promoted yet. He's too young. So that he'll be humble, he'll be thirsty, he'll learn more, he'll try, he'll strive further, and he won't cause jealousy from those around him. So you see here again that anxiety about transmitting from father to son, right? Will the transfer of Torah knowledge and rabbinic leadership be successful to the next generation? And you can't go too fast, you can't go too slow. And so it's very complicated to be able to do this successfully. So they listen to Rashbag, ach tuhu let it be. So the Rabbi said, sorry, go back down on the floor. Amar lehen Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha, mi sheyesh lo av yichye, mi she'en lo av yamut. So Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha said, well, if someone who has a father to protect him, he will live, and someone who doesn't have a father will die. He was the other sage on the bench, but Rabbi Yehoshua's father, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, was already dead. So he says, well, who's going to protect the future of Rabbi Elazar, right? So now he's going to get promoted, and he's going to arouse the jealousy of everyone, and he's going to be seen as being haughty, and that won't be able to grow in Torah as much as he could. So Achtu Nami Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon says, okay, you're right, and they put them both back down on the floor. Chalash Da'ate. So now Rabbi Elazar, he became depressed. It's never good for a rabbi to be depressed. Amar ka hashbitu la le kevati. Oh, what? They think that I'm the same as Rabbi Yehuda Nasi? Just because they demoted him, they think that we're on equal level, and so they demoted me as well. Adahu yoma ki hava amar Rabbi Milita, hava mesea le Rabbi Elazar be Rabbi Shimon. Mikan ve'elach ki hava amar Rabbi yesh lehashib. Amar le Rabbi Elazar be Rabbi Shimon, kach ve'kach yesh lecha lehashib. Zohi teshubatcha. Hashta until that day, whenever Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi would say something, his colleague Rabbi Elazar would help him out. Remember, like before, we had the chevrutat. So Rabbi Elazar Brishmon would say, I have a support for you. But from then on, when Rabbi Elazar saw it, oh, they think that we're the same. So now every time that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi would say, I have a question, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, would interrupt him and say, I know what his question is going to be. I'll tell you this is what he's going to ask, and I already have an answer. And the truth is that Rabbi, he's surrounding us with bundles of refutations, but there's nothing to them. So not only did Rabbi Elazar challenge everything that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi said, but he even would preempt the question, give the answer, and say that his whole line of reasoning is nonsense. So this is kind of parallel to before, where Rabbi Yochanan says, I wish I had Resh Lakish, he would challenge me, but then I would give
give good answers. But back then, it was in a productive way. The challenges prompted new answers by Rabbi Yochanan, and Torah grew and was better. But here, the challenge is undermining Rabbi Yehuda Nasi out of a sense of jealous competition, and so this was not productive. Halash da'ate Rabbi, and so Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, he was depressed. Atamar le le'abu, so he goes and tells his father, you know, look what he does. I try to give a question, and he interrupts and gives the answer and says my whole line of reasoning has no substance. Amar le beni al yera shu ari ben ari vata ari ben shual. And his father Rashbag says, don't let it upset you. After all, he is a lion, the son of a lion. His father was Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, and so he was able to study. They were in the cave together, Rabbi Elazar and his father, for 13 years. And so his father, he has great lineage, and he was able to learn all that Torah, and that's what makes him such a ferocious and great Torah scholar. But you are a lion, only the son of a fox. He's being humble about himself, that I could not teach you as much as his father could teach you, and therefore it's not about you, right? It's just is about your lineage. He just has this better lineage, and that's why he can be greater. But don't let it upset you. It's not a reflection on you and your personal talents. And so this is a proof that in fact Rabbi Elazar, the son of Rabbi Shimon, was in fact greater in Torah than Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Baruch Adonai Leolam. Amen v'amen.